a collaboration between the Community Foundation of Boulder County and KGNU. I am Rosanna Longo. Today, we will be diving into the pursuit of healthy ecosystems and what the recent forest fires in Boulder County, in particular, the Calwood Fire, has revealed. This monthly series explores the changes happening throughout Boulder County through the experiences of community members, especially those on the margins. We aim to shed light on community challenges, solutions, and paths forward for the county and the country. Accordingly to the recent published 2020 Ecosystems Trends Report, climate change is affecting Boulder County in many ways. Rising temperatures, for example, have resulted in drier summers and a longer fire season. According to the study, the trend in the number of days above 90 degrees Fahrenheit in Boulder has been rising steadily since 1990, with the 10-year average increasing from about 19 days per year in the 1990s to 39 days per year in the 2010s. It is worth noting that 2020 alone has had 51 days over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. The data also seems to suggest that our summer months are getting drier. Sharon Collinch led the 2020 Ecosystems Trends Report. She's a professor of environmental studies at CU Boulder.
Well, the 2020 Ecosystem Trends Report for Boulder focuses on the status and trends in our ecosystems, including things like climate, soil health, and biodiversity. The report came out of a growing interest by the community in understanding our ecosystems right here in Boulder County. So just a couple of years ago, in the fall of 2018, the Center for Sustainable Landscapes and Communities at CU collaborated with the City of Boulder's Climate Initiatives Division to plan a gathering on cities, ecosystems, and climate change. And one of the things that came out of that very well-attended and vibrant event was a need and a motivation to regularly track and communicate the status and trends of Boulder County's ecosystems and ecosystem services. Well, the center that I just mentioned is a center that's really focused on engaging our communities around issues that are of importance to us in the environment and sustainability. And so the center was a great entity to put together this report, gathering data that had been collected by city and county agencies and local residents on our ecosystem trends.
According to the U.S. Forest Service, fire seasons in the West are now 78 days longer than in the 1970s. Ecologists say forests are burning at higher elevations in areas that should not be hot and dry enough to burn. Fires feed off trees and undergrowth that has grown exceedingly dense over a century of the U.S. Forest Service focusing on fire suppression rather than prevention. Now, more attention is being placed on prevention given these costly losses from the fires. Managing the forest, including cutting down young trees, can help eliminate fuel for wildfires. At Pike National Forest, the Sorkin Coelho family are doing their part helping manage the forest by cutting a Christmas tree to take home.
Jeff, and I am cutting a Christmas tree from the National Forest, and we are here to help out the U.S. Forest Service with some thinning by taking Christmas trees out of an area that is too thick with trees.
Seems like it's hard work, but it is really needed for this forest. So if you can speak to me about what you learned today, the necessity of cutting the small trees that are in a forest.
So the national forests have grown very thick with certain types of trees. And when they grow that thick, the trees are not as healthy because it's so dense that they compete for sunlight and nutrients. It's also a fire hazard because there's a lot more fuel from the trees to burn if a fire comes through. So by cutting the trees, we remove some of that fuel and we also make the rest of the forest healthier.
Awesome. And then your last thoughts about the difference between coming to a forest to get a tree instead of going to a store and buying one.
The trees that you buy at stores are often grown on tree farms. Sometimes they come from private forests, but when you go to the national forest and cut a tree with a permit in a specific location that they've identified as needing help, you are helping out to make our national forests healthier, and that makes us all better off.
Somebody wants to say something about the experience today? Tell me your name.
I'm Elena Sorkin, and this is a great experience, and it's just really good to know that you are helping the forest and the environment. Also, it's a great way to celebrate the holiday season. It is really fun to have our own trees to celebrate the season.
What about the smell? Do you want to say something?
The smell of some trees just makes me feel happy to be outside and love being and out in nature. And some trees smell really good. I like my little baby tree because it's little baby and it smells really nice at the right where we cut it. And it was right next to one of the bigger trees, so we were like, maybe it might not be able to grow very well, so we cut it, and also I wanted a baby tree, so.
So what did you learn today?
Well, I learned first that I should wear a jacket, and second, that when you cut a tree, you grab the saw or your tool, and you get low, and we cut off a little bit of it, and so we got the little tiny pieces, but one of the pieces fell off because I cut it at too much of an angle.
Okay. So next time you know that you need to cut it straight, let's say. I'm pretty sure you learned something. Can you share what you learned today?
I learned that by cutting down the trees, you are also helping nature so other trees can live with another tree not taking up the water, and that you have to cut the tree at an angle in order for it to fall down correctly.
Very cool. So is there something else that you would like to add? Because as I have been doing these reports, also outdoor education.
Sure. This is the third year that our family has been coming to Kelsey Campground with Promotores Verdes to cut Christmas trees and learn about the ecological value of doing this and maintaining healthy forests, but also how helpful trees are and nature is to our own health. It's such an important message, especially now when we're all inside and we don't have as much access to our family and our friends, that we can be out here together outside in the fresh air is just so much fun, and it's really good for us, and everybody learned something today. So we're really thankful to be here.
That was Dana Cuello after doing her part with fuel mitigation. Mark Grandier from the U.S. Forest Service explains how fuel mitigation can help the forest.
All the different families that come out, if they only knew those little reasons why we do these things, it'd make a great impact. So all these small trees that we see around the forest floor, they are essentially what we call a ladder fuel. So if that little tree starts on fire from a small campfire, for example, it has the potential to grow bigger, and then it's going to reach those bigger trees. And once the fire gets up into the higher areas of the trees, it's harder for us to control. So by cutting down all these smaller trees, you're relieving the forest floor of all these unnecessary fuels that we have out here. So when we talk about cutting sizes of trees, they can go up to a 6-inch diameter, and anything bigger than that is big enough where it's away from the fire, but those little ones, those are the ones we want to take out. And there's not enough of us, so with the help of the public, they can come on and take out these Christmas trees or the holiday trees and then be able to bring it back. So you're getting a service out of it, and you're helping us by doing fuel mitigation.
According to news reports in 2020, wildfires burned more than 624,000 acres across Colorado, causing an estimated damage of almost $200 million. It is estimated that fighting the fires in Colorado required 38 helicopters, 198 fire engines, and more than 3,000 firefighters. In addition, air quality in Boulder County was worse than any time during the last decade. Heat, drought, and high winds combined to make 2020 the worst fire season in history, with two of the fires breaking all-time records in size and duration. Brett McCartney is the City of Boulder's Senior Climate and Sustainability Coordinator. His primary responsibility is the ongoing evolution of the city's climate action initiatives. McCartney says that the climate is warming and that we are having more extreme weather.
We probably all know this intuitively, but the data are starting to definitely show that our landscape, our ecosystem, our climate is warming, and that we're having more extreme weather types of events. Hail, for example, is increasing in frequency and in size. We are seeing, as I said, more warmer days, especially during the summer when the days over 90 are increasing significantly. And I think it's starting to give us that personal sense that we are seeing a very significant change in our overall condition. And when we published our last climate action report in 2015, we cited information from a report done at CU that suggested that our climate by mid-century is likely to be more like Albuquerque's than it is the climate of Boulder that we've had historically. So we're seeing very significant changes. I just should also note that this summer's fires are another very important indicator or illustrator of a trend that we're also seeing, which is that while we are not necessarily seeing dramatic decreases in moisture, we're seeing the kinds of conditions that can rapidly dry out landscapes very quickly and lead to the kinds of sort of intense fire experiences that we had late this year.
One of those intense experiences is a record fire in the lands of Calwood Educational Center in October. Rafael Salgado, executive director, explains how they were already struggling due to the pandemic when the fire came.
We, as an organization, have experienced some difficulties, just like most people in 2020 because of the pandemic. It's been hard for us as an organization trying to figure out what to do next, as we don't have the groups, the schools that have come to Calwood for many years. And then in October, we added another challenge, which is the fire that happened in this part of the foothills that burned half of the property of Calwood. We lost 600 acres of property, which most of it was 100%. We had 100% mortality of the vegetation, especially pine trees. And that is really heartbreaking for us because this is a place where we have made a lot of memories with the kids that come up here with the staff, and seeing how this fire that just went through the property so quickly and so hot, and it burned it. It's been really hard for us to deal with. We care about this place. I personally, I've been working in Calwood for 22 years. I live here on site too. So this is personal. I have a lot of memories of all the corners of the property, and getting used to see the scar that this fire left has been difficult. We see it every day, but we hope that, fires like this in the future will be less intense. Unfortunately, this was one of those, what the experts call it, the 1%, which means that only few fires really get this intense. And so this is what's unfortunately one of those, and which left a lot of the land here at Calwood and other properties east of us completely burned. and not just the trees and the vegetation, but also the soil. And that's one of the big challenges that we as an organization and all these agencies that are working on that restoration plan is that, you know, we want to protect the soil because right now all the soil has been exposed. And we all know here in Colorado what happens in the summer when we get those big storms. And we don't want to lose the soil from those big storms. So there have been a lot of efforts from different agencies on creating a restoration plan so that we can start working on the property and making sure that the land is ready for the summer for those big storms. And that way, you know, we are more, you know, the land is set for the next phase, which is restoring the land by perhaps reseeding or planting new trees or seeds for trees or any other vegetation that, you know, we won't have to do. Also, you know, we're going to have the opportunity to create a new forest. That is something that I'm personally excited about it because we hope to get the kids involved, the schools, the families that come up here, and helping us to design the new forest. The new forest, obviously, we will have a chance to design it where, you know, we know what happened with this fire. So we hope that the new forest that we built here at Cowood is going to resist a similar fire. So it's an opportunity that we're going to have working with the scientists, with the experts, and the different agencies to come up with that. So fires in Colorado are becoming more common, I guess, and the fire season is getting longer. Now these days, you know, we had these warm falls instead of having the cold nights in the fall. And having a fire in October used to be very unusual, and now it's becoming more common. And that's a big problem, you know, because we had a really dry year, and then we had this longer fire season. That leaves the trees, that doesn't give the trees a good chance to survive a big fire. The trees are dried, the ground is dry, the grass is dry. So we hope that what we learn here at Cowood from now on is something. You know, hopefully we can come with help a little bit on how to better understand, you know, a fire like this and how we can mitigate our lands a little bit better so that we can prevent another fire like this. So it has been difficult for us as employees here at Cowood to see this land that has been here for many years, and now we have this car that we see every day. But, you know, we just need to take it in a positive way. You know, we're going to turn this place into a research field center, I guess, that where scientists or schools and the community can come up and do some research projects and learn about more about what happened here with the fire and the intensity of this fire and the restoration process that we're going to do. But also, the other half of the property didn't get burned. And we still need to do quite a bit of work in there because even though Cowood has done a lot of fire mitigation in the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years, we learned that we still need to do more. We need to be more aggressive on our fire mitigation, which means, you know, manage our forest a little bit better so that our forest is better prepared for the next fire. Because I always knew we were going to have a fire, which I just didn't know when. And I know we're going to have another fire in the next, I don't know how many years. We just hope that our land is going to be better prepared. So that's another task that we need to do and keep working on that and learning from this fire to see what else we can do differently on our other side of the property that didn't burn. You know, this year was a very aggressive year when it comes to fires. And people are going to talk about fires for the next probably few months. But I'm afraid that, you know, after a few months, and especially we have another, if we get a wet year with a lot of snow and rain, and there's no more fires, let's say in 2021, that people are going to forget about what happened in 2020. To me, that it's alarming, because we can't really stop talking about it. And not just talking about it, but we need to start doing something more aggressive when it comes to managing our forests here in Colorado. And, you know, I hope that this year is going to open a lot of opportunities among all the agencies and experts, and really invest. That's the right word to really use in here, is invest in our forest, to make sure that we prepare our forest better. And here at Coward, we're trying to do that in our other half of the property that didn't burn. Even though we have done a lot of fire mitigation, we feel like we need to be more aggressive. We need to do a better job. You know, in the area that got burned, we have done some fire mitigation, and those areas didn't get burned. So we know that those projects work. And so we just need to have a better plan, you know, and you know, I feel so bad to really even walk some of the burn areas where I knew we had these massive trees that were like 400 years old. And those trees, if you think about it, those trees have survived a lot of fires for 400 years. And yet, this fire burned them. And so what was different this year? You know, and I think it has to do with all this climate change that is happening and these long fire seasons. And that's the reason I feel like, you know, the forest is changing. And for that reason, I think our strategies also need to change. And so that we can continue
Salgado
having forests in Colorado.
The team members who will be helping restore the lands and creating a laboratory for others to learn how to restore the land after the fire.
Sure. Yeah, there's so many agencies that are working together on how to restore this land from the damage of this fire, the Coward Fire. And there's so many agencies, you know, from Boulder County, the City of Longmont, the City of Boulder, NRCS, U.S. Forest Service, and many more. Universities also are involved in some research projects as well. And local experts, fire departments. I mean, it is a big team that was formed to really try to understand, you know, what is the process of restoration is going to look like, and what are, you know, the efforts and also the sources, you know, that we will need to really do all the restoration. Restoring a piece of land this big is going to take a lot of funding and a lot of hours of work, a lot of paid people, but also a lot of volunteers as well. So the only way we can really do this is if we work together. So Coward is part of this team that was formed to do all this work. So we're excited about being part of that. And I know that the plan is going to contemplate a lot of things that we worry about right now, like, you know, controlling the erosion of that soil, later on to restoring the vegetation, you know, from grasses to trees, bushes, flowers, and also making sure that the water along those creeks, you know, stay clean, because, you know, most likely, unfortunately, we're going to have some issues with losing some of the soil in the summer. And all that mud is going to come down to the creeks, and that water is going to go down to the city where we drink that water. So there will be a lot more work to do to clean that water. So we try to do a lot of work right away so that the cities don't have to do a lot of work to clean the water from all the mud that is coming down from those, from all these hills. So it's a big project, but I think requires also a big team. So I think we have the team that we need, and, you know, we still working on collecting data and coming up with the specific projects so we can start working on the restoration.
Salgado says that the community wants them to survive, to continue providing outdoors education for low-income families and especially Latino students, some of whom have access to the lands for the first time when they come to Calwood in their first experience in outdoor education when they are in fifth grade.
Yeah, this has definitely a big, I don't know how can I describe this. It's just another layer of us to worry about. You know, the pandemic was one thing and not the fire. And, you know, at one point, I personally didn't know if we could actually survive this. And I still have that doubt, you know, that I don't know if what is coming is going to, it's not going to affect in a big way where Calwood has to do something drastic. And I hope not, but you know, the reason I feel like that's not gonna happen to do something drastic, I mean, I'm talking about like maybe closing Calwood down, which I don't think is gonna happen. But some people might question that because, you know, we're already having issues with the pandemic and now the fire. So those two things, some people might think that it is just no way this organization can survive. I think we will survive. And the only reason I say that is because we have received a lot of support from the community. The community wants us to survive. The community wants us to stay open. The community wants us to keep providing the services that we have done for, you know, 38 years. And we have seen that since the fire. You know, we got so many people that reach out to us asking how they can help. And not just donating, but also with ideas, with offering to come up and volunteer. And I think that is what is going to keep Calwood alive, the truth, seriously, because it is just no way we can do this on our own. We don't have the resources. We just don't. And so obviously, you know, I can say too, you know, this is going to be a long process, and this is not going to be only like a 2-3 month type of work. It's going to take years. You know, I'm thinking 3, 5, 10 years, I don't know. So we would continue to need that community support. You know, it's not going to be just for a couple months after the fire, but, you know, and I know the community will respond, will continue responding on helping us in the future. And when we're ready to really do the main projects to restore this land. Our hope is that, you know, with the pandemic, is that eventually, hopefully we in the summer, we can have groups again at Calwood so that we can go back to our mission. Right now, we're doing a little bit of that on the weekends with families, but that's not enough for us to really survive. And so the summer is a big hope that we have that, and then obviously next fall when the schools can come back to Calwood. I just feel like it has to be that way. You know, I hope that we can have our groups back. Mentally, we need that here, all the employees. You know, we sign up to work here at Calwood to meet our mission of connecting kids and family to this beautiful place that we have here in Colorado, the mountains. And in the last 9 months, we've been just surviving the pandemic, and now we're going to switch the gears on restoring the land. And none of us sign up for that. But that's what we need to do. And we're ready, you know, with the help from the community, with the help of the experts, I think we're going to be okay.
My family is one of those families whose children were engaged by the outdoors education experience. During the beginning of this summer, my son Andres better, a young citizen scientist who first came to Calwood some 8 years ago as part of his fifth grade experience, offered to begin to document the biodiversity of the land. He started an iNaturalist project for Calwood, taking pictures of and cataloging the insects, fungi, and other overlooked organisms that are part of the land's biodiversity. About these bees in Colorado, in here today in Calwood.
Bees. I think I heard recently that in Colorado there's around 1,000 species of native bees, and probably more than 90% of all of those native bee species are solitary, which means that they don't have a colony. They don't have a queen. Each female bee takes care of its own young, reproduces with a male, and makes a burrow in the ground or in a tree to lay its egg and take care of its young. They are also pollinators, though. Like most insects, everything from a bee to a dragonfly can pollinate. Even mosquitoes could pollinate if they happen to land on certain flowers. I know in the jungle there's cockroaches that eat pollen, so those are pollinators too, which I like to say a lot because a lot of people think cockroaches and mosquitoes are useless. But every single organism plays a role in the environment and keeps it all together.
What else were you able to see today in Calwood that really surprised you, that you were not expecting to see?
Well, you pointed out this really weird white fungus that kind of looked like a white ball that was just attached to a fallen log. And so I was really confused. I felt it and it was still moist and soft, so I just kind of gave it a little tug and it immediately popped off that log. And inside there were these tiny, tiny little black beetles. They're like black, a little bit of orange. I think they're fungus beetles, and I think what that white thing was is a type of fungus. I saw on another branch or another log that was on the ground, I saw some dried up white balls that were a little smaller, and I took those off and I looked underneath, and they had pores, little pores like you'd see on a polypore mushroom. So many little pores is basically what a polypore is, what it means. And so on the underside, you could see this little hole, and inside there were the little pores. And I had heard about this before. I've heard of the veiled polypore mushroom that grows on trees around here in Colorado. And it's a medicinal mushroom, I think. But usually when you find those and they're fresh, there's an insect living inside. But when they're dry, There weren't any insects inside. Other thing I found was this really big orange tachinid fly, which I got pictures of. And it was pollinating these big yellow flowers. I think those are parasites. They lay their eggs on caterpillars and stuff. And their larvae eat through the inside of the caterpillar while it's alive until they pop out, turn into flies. And then they're pollinators.
Yailin Gonzalez is another young Latina who had the opportunity to do an internship in Calwood, and that internship changed her whole life.
I always said that when I grew up, I'm going to be a police officer or something that had to do with the government. But that 1 week I spent in Calwood with Rafa and Angie, who also works there, you know, was cutting trees and stuff, I was like, wow, you know, this 1 week in the forest camping was so amazing to me. So that first year I did the internship, you know, my point of view completely changed. And following that internship, I actually declared that I'm going to be studying environmental studies this upcoming fall in college to pursue my dream of becoming an environmental lawyer.
For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.